ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Recently, we've heard a lot about smart cars, driverless vehicles that are supposed to lower the risk of being on the roads. But to have a truly smart highway system requires technology with special sensors built into roads, and even algorithms that paint a picture of how traffic moves. On this edition of UWM Today, we meet two members of the UWM College of Engineering who are on a mission to outsmart traffic. Joining us in the studio is Xiao Qin and Troy Liu, both associate professors of civil and environmental engineering at UWM. And Xiao, we're going to begin with you because when we talk about an easier ride on the roads, we're not just talking about roads. We're talking about the entire infrastructure that supports the highway system, correct?
Exactly, Tom. You summarized pretty well, actually, about smart transportation. Let's put in the context of smart cities. Well, the smart city is actually to manage a city better with information and communication technologies. And the difference between a smart city and a traditional city lies in three aspects. The first is smart infrastructure. The second is analytical procedures. So that's something we talked about today about big data, you know, urban analytics, and crowdsourcing, right? And third thing that separates the traditional cities from the smart city is smart grid. So not just transportation, but also the electricity and water system. So the more exciting is Wisconsin is actually start something that pretty smart. There's a couple of initiatives proposed by the Southeast region Wisconsin, including introducing Waze program such as Connected Citizen. So they're going to use Waze. By the way, Waze is a Google type of program that provide navigation, automatic navigation, advanced travel information. So they're going to use Waze to produce advanced travel information for all the citizens. And there's a special program provided by Waze called a Connected Citizen Program. The second initiative is Smart Streetlight. So they're going to work with Philips to provide intelligent lighting system. So not just by schedule, that actually can reflect based on the actual light condition. Is that pretty cool?
So there's a whole sort of system that's on the way down the road, pardon the pun, that will not only make driving easier, but make it more efficient too, which
Absolutely.
Is incredibly important.
Absolutely. Actually, if we take a look at the city of Madison, they are working on two also very exciting programs. One is called a basic connected vehicle. So their plan to convert the Park Street, which connecting the University Avenue and the Beltline into a connected corridor. And they actually talked in the conversation with a Cadillac dealer to implement their connected vehicles. And the second is autonomous driving. So they're going to actually use UW, University of Wisconsin-Madison campus and APEC campus as a testbed to deploy the autonomous vehicles and electrical cars. That's pretty exciting, right?
Boy, the Jetsons are almost around the corner, aren't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely.
Troy, let's bring you into the conversation. You spend much of your time thinking about this notion of a smart city. Tell us about your work.
Yeah, I just totally agree with Shaw, and there's a lot of good initiatives going on in Wisconsin, but I just want to highlight something that going on nationally. USDOT have recent programs called Smart City Challenge. They select from a probably more than 100 cities, or 70 cities, sorry, 70 cities, and they finalize seven cities that's going to be the city that's going to win the proposal, win the grants. Of each city is going to get $40 million or $50 million grant to do innovations and demonstrate and showcase their progress towards smart cities. The basic goal is try to, say, relieve congestions, make travelers safe, and try to address the climate change and reduce the greenhouse emission And I mean, there's a lot of actually make the infrastructure stable and revitalize the economy. So there's a this type of a big context. And at UWM, we recently just start to moving to that direction. And both Shaw and I are working on a couple of grants and products, try to, make the traffic smart. We're working on smart signals. We develop smartphone applications. I think Shaw just mentioned that Waze, right? Waze is a really good program that can pop up real-time information to travelers. And we also develop models that can help, say, for example, something happened on the freeway. We can use our algorithm to tell, not only tell the drivers there's something happened, but also tell the drivers what is the best route to detour, if that is necessary. So we have our power and models and algorithms to back up the system. So we used to, I think 3 years ago, we have developed systems for Wisconsin Department of Transportation to enhance their 511 system, you know, the 511, right? So basically people on highway, they call 511, they can get real-time information about travelers, about traffic. So, but we, you know, we use our models and expertise to try to improve our system. And we are working on construction zones, you know, on freeways. You know, we have every summer, every year, Wisconsin spend a lot of money in trying to maintain the freeways and using develop construction zones. So we try to use our technology to try to minimize the impact of the construction zones on overall network traffic. So we try to relieve the congestions and make safer work zone constructions and improve the quality of life in the city.
And you've actually gotten an investment in the form of a 5-year, $1.5 million grant mm-hmm. to do just that, to make
That's
sure
right.
that we understand how to get those work zones to be as safe as possible, because literally people's lives depend upon it.
Mm-hmm. That product basically is we try to develop a kind of like an integrated system that brings the contractors, the state agencies, and travelers in the same situation awareness. So basically, we try to analyze. So for example, we have a couple of hundred work zone products happen every year in the state. So how are we going to best schedule those work zones to minimize their impacts? How are we going to automatically collect data? You know, we have all type of sensors on the road. We have sensors, the radar sensors. We have sensors buried under pavement. We have cameras. But how are we going to integrate the multiple source data into a unified platform and get the data and analyze the data and make smart decisions? So basically, that grant is all about try to make that happen.
Chavez, you think about all of this data. Give our listeners an idea of how it is collected. I've always personally wondered, how in the heck do they tell me, how can they tell me that it's a 6-minute as opposed to a 9-minute ride when there's something embedded in the roadway? What's going on in there that is, that's, are they counting vehicles, or is it some sort of estimate based on what happens in 30 seconds on a section of the road?
Tom, that's a great question. Actually, Choi summarized very well about a lot of activities being performed and underway at UWM. Yes, we're still counting cars, but not the traditional ways of counting cars. We rely on the sensors. We rely on the intelligent transportation systems, such as, you know, the loop detectors buried on the pavement, such as the microwave detectors, ultrasonic detectors, CCTV, right? And nowadays, you actually each travelers, as long as you're equipped with a smartphone, that with some Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, you can be detected. You're kind of a volunteer without being noticed become our data, portable data collection.
So I don't even know it, but you're measuring the interaction between my
Correct,
phone and
Correct, but
it's
the anonymous.
Uh-huh.
It's anonymous. We're not tracking down your identity. Basically, we match something called a MAC. That's a unique code associated with your Bluetooth or Wi-Fi device. So we're able to calculate, timestamp the locations, and then the difference of the time we calculate travel speed.
There must be an enormous amount of data that you have to crunch then.
Yep.
How do you manage that? What program do you use or what computer do you use to go ahead and suck all of this in and then make it understandable or useful?
That is part of the so-called big data analytics. There's a lot of programs that are able to do the data mining at a much, much larger scale. So, and another interesting aspect is called gamification. I don't know if you have heard this word or not. So yes. Basically, they use some principles in games to incentivize behaviors and, engage connected citizens, right? Because we can give you words, points to make you make some wise decisions, better decisions. So it's all about information. Ultimately, it's all about informed citizens and engaged, connected citizens.
At the beginning of the program, I was talking about driverless cars, and we've seen the work that Google has been doing on their cars. Apple supposedly is rethinking whether or not they're going to be in the car building business, or will they focus on some other support system. I'm curious from both of your standpoints. First of all, do you think it is reasonable to expect that? I don't know, in 10 years, many of us will be driving, many of us won't be driving. We'll be riding in a driverless car. What do you think? What's your prediction, Troy?
My vision is that I think that is totally possible within the next 15 or 20 years.
May be a little optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of issues there. That's kind of like called automated driving or connected vehicles. So traditionally, on the highway, traffic engineering, we know that one lane on the freeway maybe carries at most 2,200 vehicles per hour. That's the maximum. But if you have that type of technology, that can bring this number to, say, 3,000. But people need to get off the freeway. So when they exit, they can go pretty smoothly along the freeway. But when they exit, there is a signal over there. So they're going to still have a queue back to the freeway. So there's not like a vehicle technology. It's just what Shaum just mentioned. It's called smart infrastructure. So it's kind of like integrated system. Before we actually, I think right now, it's kind of like the technology for smart vehicles has become more mature than the smart infrastructures. But we don't have, I think we need kind of like a similar revolution for the infrastructure side. For this to happen.
How about you, Shao?
I agree with Troy 100%. Actually, it is happening. Uber announced a couple weeks ago they start the autonomous vehicle pickup in Pittsburgh. And when you look at the other parts of the nation, California, Nevada, they allow driverless vehicle to be on the road. So definitely, technology-wise, it is getting better and better, mature. But there's some legal issues, institutional issues you need to overcome. Talk about insurance, talk about the liabilities, right? The people behind the wheel may not actually drive that vehicle, right? So those things need to be sorted out before we can implement the driverless car on a large scale. Then in between, that's very touch point. We have to deal with the mixed traffic with driverless car and traditional vehicle. But in the meantime, we look at the driver population, right? I have a 6-month-old son, and I think he's like alpha generation. And my students now are millennial generation. I asked a survey then, do you want to drive a car or you want to take a public transit or even by biking or walking? A lot of them opt for not owning car. They want to take public transit. They want to take advantage of the nice weather and the walk and bike to work or school.
And not have to worry about the expense gas
exactly.
And insurance
parking
and car payments and so on.
Excellent. Yeah, absolutely.
So that has to be a wake-up call to Detroit and other automakers, right? I mean, and let's talk about that. How engaged or how involved are the automakers in the work that the two of you are doing that is really perhaps getting ready to pull apart the freeway or the highway system that has just been taken for granted? Are they at the table in these conversations?
I think it depends, you know, some because there's a federal level NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, just released the guidelines for the driverless vehicle. And the automobile industries and manufacturers actually respond differently. I just came back from ITS Forum in Madison, Wisconsin, where Toyota representative gave a presentation about what Toyota is working on. And interesting enough, you know, Toyota is basically following the guidelines instead of leading the guidelines, or they're not trying to change it. They're just trying to comply to it. But others like Tesla's or maybe GM, they may behave more aggressively. Speaking of aggressiveness, they may approach the academia like UWM faculty and sit down with and try to communicate what will be the best way for the vehicle to communicate with traffic signals, for example, to maximize the traffic capacity, to deal with different driver behaviors, you know, lane changing, waving, diverge or diverge, etc.
Troy, earlier you talked about the fact that, well, we can perhaps create a system that will work really, really well on our interstates or, mm-hmm. or the controlled, closed highway system, freeway system that we have. At some point, we're all going to exit, right? Because we're going to go to the store, we're going to go home, we're mm-hmm. going to go to school. And then it's a whole different ballgame because it's one thing to go ahead and remanufacture or re-engineer, I should say, mm-hmm. A freeway system. Entirely different with those millions of miles of city, town, village streets that you've got. How far into the future will it be before those roads are as smart as the freeway system?
Yeah, that's I think the major bottleneck, I believe, for, I think that's also a major component for smart city challenge. Say, I know, for example, I think Shaw just mentioned that we have signals called smart signals. Vehicles can talk to the signals, can know the signal information. And I know Audi, and they are doing a test vehicle that the vehicles can actually know the traffic signal information much in advance. So they can advise the drivers to make their decisions. So that's kind of like the start of the smart infrastructure, but the smart infrastructure is certainly more than that. So, you know, some people, they're working on putting the solar panels along the pavement. So the roads have actually become a self-sustained, and they use the energy to put the lights on the road during the nights, and they use the energy to support the power of the controllers on the road. And there's many, many of these type of things happening. I think the USDOT Smart City Challenge is basically try to get all those type of innovations and try to see what will be the right direction. I think everybody was just trying to find the future directions.
If you don't mind, I want to add to that. Mm-hmm. The smart infrastructure is more than just technologies. There's some smart design. I will give an example as runabouts. Wisconsin has about 350 runabouts and 194 on the state highway system, and the rest in the local system. So local.
And I suggest you either love them or you hate those roundabouts.
But I like the word of smart instead of intelligent, because intelligence is something you're born with, but smart is something you learn over time. So driver learn to drive, navigate through roundabout, and they become smarter, right? And the roundabout has its unique feature in terms of design to address the safety issues as well as, you know, the efficiency, because it creates continuous flow, low emission, so we call it green design.
Yeah. You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and today in the studio, we've got two engineers from UWM's College of Engineering and Applied Sciences talking about smart traffic. How do we build better roadway systems? How do we take advantage of those driverless cars that are on the horizon? And we're learning more about both of those items from Xiaoqin and Troy Liu, who are giving us the lowdown on just how soon we could look forward to closing our eyes and falling asleep in the car, knowing all will be good because of the system underneath us. As we think, Xiao, about some of the other work that you've done earlier this summer, we brought Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett by your offices and mm-hmm. went into your labs, and you began talking to him about the work that you're doing analyzing crash data,
right?
How accidents are impacting our understanding of what to do. Tell us about that work. He was amazed. I think he could have sat there all day listening to you talk about
traffic.
I'm glad,
Tom, you bring up this topic, and the safety is our top priority. For many, many years, actually for decades, we were trying to find out the crash contributing factors and trying to find out the appropriate and effective countermeasures to address those issues. And it's a fact that over 80% of the crash contributing are human factors or the behavior issues, right? But we invest heavily on the engineering solutions with the hope that we can help to correct the people's mistakes. Our team spent a lot of time looking into the underlying relationship between the number of crashes and the crash severity and a long list of variables, including engineering variables, behavioral variables, and other, enforcement and education kind of components. And we want to use statistical methodology to develop a definitive relationship to tell us, not only help us predict the number of crashes given the certain scenario, but also tell us the cause-effect relationship existing between those variables.
So we've had traffic crashes, traffic accidents from the time we first had cars out on the road. Why has it taken so long for us to take a more systematic approach to understanding what causes those crashes?
That's another excellent question. Over time, we don't have good data. That's probably the biggest roadblock to any safety research. And after T21, then the state DOT are mandated to have the six management system. One of them is called a safety management system. That's how we start to collect the data systematically. And then we have the crash reporting system. By the way, Wisconsin is in the transition from the MV4004, which has been used for many, many years, to the new crash reporting form. That is the new crash reporting form. We have new data elements and a few that can give us, shed new light on the new contributing factors could be. So because we have more data, and now we have some data that direct with vehicle performance, we're really able to get down to the very, very deep level to understand the mechanisms and the facts behind it.
Troy, as you think about that next generation of cars and all the data that has to be managed and be processed, do you think that the cars that are on the road today with the smart systems that they already have, we all have little computers in our car measuring how much gas we use and regulating the functions, are those good enough? Are the cars smart enough to help, if you could tap into that data, answer some of these questions?
I think I agree with Sean's point. I would like not using intelligent, but just smart, because usually we want to have type of, right now, artificial intelligence become a really hot spot. Google and Microsoft are using artificial intelligence to provide support for their customers. So the similar thing, if the vehicles are intelligent or smart enough, they can adapt to the driver's behaviors or their patterns. They can find the patterns because we need data. So drivers, I just give you one example. For example, when you are driving on the arterial, we have traffic lights. And when the traffic lights, it's going to change from green to red, but there is a yellow in between. So when the green changes to yellow, sometimes you are kind of like in a dilemma, right? You feel pretty confident to maybe you accelerate a little bit, you can pass. But if you don't do anything, maybe you're not safe to make a smooth stop. Right?
I actually got a ticket in Chicago with one of those red light cameras because it turned yellow and I didn't know, do I go, do I stop? And my wife was not happy with me because I couldn't make up my mind. And
exactly the same thing to me. I got a couple of tickets in D.C. But this type of situation is called dilemma zone. And according to the statistics, I think 30% or 40% of the crashes on the arterials is because of the dilemma zone. So because, especially for senior citizens, because they respond to the change, the signal changes a little bit slower than the young people. So we need type of smart system to analyze the driver behavior and provide the support, their decision making to the drivers, so they don't have a dilemma anymore. So we already have this type of system, and we develop a system to say we give a warning to the drivers, we let them know the signal status, we let them reduce the speed. But if all this happens, still not going to eliminate the dilemma zone, we're going to send a command to the controller, and the controller is going to change the traffic lights. So keep the drivers safe, Sean mentioned, first priority. But we have all these type of smart systems happening. I think we, right now, if we don't get a big picture, but we got different parts. And later on, we're going to integrate them together.
It's like a lot of musicians ready to be assembled and play a wonderful score, but they need a director. They need
exactly.
somebody to conduct all right. of this, right?
I think that's why USDOT actually put a smart city challenge recently. So they tried to put together every city's innovation, different type of innovations, and their lessons learned, so we can move to the next direction.
I want to add to that, Columbus, Ohio, is a winner of the smart city challenges, and automatically the city will receive $50 million, including $40 million from USDOT, another $10 million from Paul Allen's foundation, VELCA. In addition, all the private sectors are willing to match up 2-to-1. So do the math, they're going to receive $150 million in total.
Is something like that on the horizon for Milwaukee or other cities in Wisconsin?
Madison tried, and they put together a very nice proposal. But it's super competitive. We hope that the next round, Milwaukee or Madison, can be part of the finalists.
Well, you both certainly have demonstrated that you understand the challenges that are there, and we wish both of you the best of luck as you continue your work. And let's see if we can get some of that federal money here to make our
but
cities
Tom,
even smarter.
But Tom, I want to add to that. I want to add one thing is technology is a double-sided sword, right? On the one hand, you benefit a lot from technology. Otherwise, on the other hand, you think about the risks and threats, the cybersecurity issues, the increasing complicated interoperability issues, right? And also, smartphone is great, but smartphone is the single biggest source of destruction. So we better use the technology to their advantages.
Exactly. Somebody just mentioned that if I want to hijack the signals, traffic lights.
Yeah.
They're going to put the city down.
So. I saw that in a movie once, and
yeah.
It's a scary thought.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for taking time today to share your insights, and best of luck in your
thank
future
you
work.
Me.
Thank you, Tom.
Xiao Qin and Troy Liu, both associate professors of civil and environmental engineering at UW-Milwaukee, are guests on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We will see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody, and drive safely. I'm Tom Lejack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.